Hello, all, and welcome to the Fantasy and Sci-Fi Fanatics podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Kubal. Today, I have a very special guest, Keith McWalter. How are you doing today, Keith?
Great. How are you doing, Daniel?
Oh, excellent, excellent. Like I said before we get started, thank you for being so flexible. It feels good to finally be able to talk to you in person. Talking to the company for a while, and it always feels good when someone approaches me like, "Hey, do you want to interview this person?" And I check everything out, and I'm like, "Yeah, this looks really good." So your story sounded really awesome, looked really cool in terms of the cover, and the blurb and all that, and definitely piqued my interest. So I was really glad that they approached me. I'm always looking for kind of, something different, than we've had on in the past in terms of genre or subgenres. So I'm really glad, that we could connect and, get you on today and, kind of talk about you and your writing, your experience, and, introduce it to your audience. So thank you so much for coming on today.
Super. My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So we'll start there with that first question. What has your writing journey been like up until this point?
Well, it's been a very long road. I was an English major way back in college
Oh,
and
cool.
loved to write back then, and did a bit of creative writing in that period of life. But then I went to law school and I took a 30-year detour through the practice of law. So it's only in the last 15 or so years that I've actually devoted a significant amount of time to writing, which was really my first love. And I write a couple of blogs, one which is sort of a essay and op-ed style thing on a blog called M Mortal Coil, and then a travel blog, which is just
Oh, cool.
places around the world that I've recently been in, and write them up often about resorts and whatnot, and that's called Spoiled Guest. But apart from that, I do fiction writing. I mean, my main time consumer is fiction in the novel form. I'm not really a short story writer. I tried that when I was young, and it's not my style. I need more space than that.
I get that.
So, I've been writing long form fiction for about 15 years now. And the result has been two novels, both published. I went the whole route of literary agents and all that stuff, which is a whole other boring subtopic. We can delve into it some other time. But it's one of the most frustrating, as any writer who's tried it knows, one of the most frustrating and strange worlds. Just to get into the world of publishing, and specifically the whole agent subculture ecosystem is pretty strange these days, and there's
Yeah.
a lot of charlatans out there. But I was lucky enough to find an independent publisher that's taken both my books, and they're distributed through Simon and Schuster, which is really nice because that means there's the physical distribution is excellent. And there is a for Lifers, the book we're talking about today. It's also an audiobook and digital format,
Oh,
so should be easily accessible by hopefully anyone anywhere. But yeah, it's been an interesting journey, and one that I hope will continue for a while.
that's awesome. I'm so glad to hear you say that there's an audio option because I have a small child, so I have to be able to do Kindle and audio or audio and paperback of some sort. It's just I have to do at least usually on average with him like 30% to 40% of a book. Otherwise, it would take me forever to read a book. So.
I mean, it's interesting. I think you could probably divide the world of readers into those who do listen, who do audiobooks, and those who don't. And I was never that sort. I'm old school enough that I wanted a physical page in front of me. I'm not even that great at screens, but when it came to do this audiobook, quick digression, when we it came to do this audiobook for this latest book, Lifers, I found a great what you do is you end up getting auditions from various people who want to read these days, and there's platforms all over for accomplishing that. And I got about 30 auditions, which is great response, and started listening to a lot of them, male and female voices. And What I quickly realized, being a novice to the audiobook world, is there's like two different ways you can, at least two different ways you can approach an audiobook. And one is what I would have expected, being an ignoramus about such things, is that someone would read the book. They would simply read it to you, and you'd listen almost like you were reading yourself, but you'd listen to the words as they're coming through and create your own, ideas about what was going on. But then there's this other type of reader who will, or performer, who actually acts out the what's on the page and does different voices and different accents, and which kind people like, I discovered is an interesting subject in itself. And I ended up with going someone who a very accomplished guy who sort of does the middle of the road. He's not too extreme in acting everything out, but he also has a way with different voices for different characters and that sort of thing. So anyway, it was a sort of a, speaking of the journey, it was an interesting experience just to go through that whole process.
I had actually last season I had Aaron Moon and Amy Hutchins on. They're two voice actors that I spoke to, and they I thought I like knew quite a bit because I've talked to a lot of people, and I've talked to a lot of like voice actors and narrators online and stuff, friends of them and things. And I don't know, I thought I read some articles apparently and in the podcast, and I thought I knew something, but they taught us a lot and taught me a lot. I was like, wow, this is really extreme. It was really interesting, but I totally agree. It's like a whole new thing, right? And I talked to a lot of authors about that too, when they have their experience, throughout the whole process where, because now you're thinking it is a whole new market, right? And I've done the math, from some of the math that some people were supporting from 2 years ago, with Audible Numbers, Sound Booth Studios, Podium. And it really seemed like you're getting upwards that you potentially could get upwards of 60% more listeners than readers in some categories, depending on what your category or, genre or subgenre is, So that, I mean, that's a huge untapped market, right? If you can actually get into it. So
And
yeah, it's
growing
interesting.
all the time. It's remarkable. So anyway, you can't ignore it, but it's a different world. And
Oh, totally.
at one point somebody asked me, well, why don't you read your own book? And I had to explain, well, it's like 3 or 4 hours of actual work to produce an hour of a book. I mean, it's and if you've got a if you've got a 10-hour audiobook, that's a ton of time. Anyway, my hats are off to all those people who do that for a living, or even
Well, some people
for
ask about that. They're like, I was in a group, and they're like, "Why is it so hard to find an audio narrator?" We mentioned it. I was like, "Dude, that's what the." Like Aaron and Amy were saying, like they're like, well, like an hour of work might take me 3 hours. I might have to redo it, And I see it the same as, as having a really good artist. My artist Caleb, he's amazing. Shout out to Caleb. I have a brand new Urban Fantasy like logo for my Monster Hunter series, like just absolutely chef's kiss. I'm not gonna AI that, I mean, first of all, he's amazing, and it blew my mind what he was able to do. And we tried coming up with a couple of concepts and things, and he just like ran with it, And I think it's the same thing, like listening to Aaron or Amy, I'm like, oh my gosh, like I have a female character that either one of them I would love, for them to do the audible for, even part, even like part of. Because another thing too that, I just want to mention, people, like you could also have male or female narrators, right, in the same, same project, which adds a whole nother dimension and level. So yeah, I totally agree. I've been trying to get back with them because they had a male narrator that I was supposed to do a seminar with them, and I emailed them like 6 months ago. I was like, my life is insane right now. I was like, I'm really gonna try and do this by next spring. But yeah, I can't wait to get them on though, because we're actually gonna have like a whole huge talk about a lot of those different things. But I think it's good that you bring it up though, because this is what I always tell authors, like you bring up what you want to bring up, because that could be something that's on someone else's mind right now. This is a Journeyman's podcast, or and I always say it to people, it's for people that got their first three books out, and I've had people come on here with 7 books that are like, I'm still trying to figure out the audible thing or audio thing. So I think it's a really good thing, to talk about, and it's a great platform to do it, as a podcast like this one. So I think that's a great point. But that's really cool that you have gotten to experience that, with lifers. So I think that's really awesome. Some people, like I said, don't get to that till book three or four, maybe even longer than that. So I think that's a really good experience to have off the bat because again, now every time you write a different novel, right, or book two or something, right, that's going to completely change your perspective and experience, right?
It
With
absolutely
voice
does.
tone. Totally.
And the characters, I mean, I've got a lot of different characters we can talk about a little later in the book that are of various ages and extractions and nationalities in some cases. And it's a challenge to get somebody who can handle all that. I mean, it really
I agree. I couldn't believe when I interviewed Aaron Moon. I just have to say, people haven't seen the episode. You gotta go check it out because when we say range, like you don't understand what range is until you see somebody who can truly act, right? Particularly with their and Amy too. Like the both they gave like specifics on what you just said and examples, right, on what to look for a good narrator, right, or a great narrator. And I was just so shocked. Like I felt like I was talking to like four different people, like male or female characters. I was like, it was really awesome. So yeah, it's really interesting to find people who have that type of range. I totally agree. It's really cool. Well, speaking of books, what genres do you currently write in and why?
Well, I've sort of gone run the gamut in my first two published books. The first one I did, which came out about 3, 4 years ago, was very literary. It's sort of what I grew up with in my as an English major. I was trying to write a classic late 20th century, early 21st century domestic novel, about relationships and loss and grieving and recovery and all that sort of thing. And I think it's a very successful book from my personal perspective, but it was rough going in the sense that it wasn't always fun to write. It was a lot of emotion, a lot of personal interaction that was not a lot of plot. It wasn't plot driven. It was totally character driven. And for anybody who's interested, it's called When We Were All Still Alive, which you can tell has got some gloomy undertones to it. But it's about a man who loses his wife and has to deal with the reality of that. And that was I it was I'm glad I did it. I'm very proud of it. But for my next project, I wanted to do something that would be fun. I mean, fun, just fun for the reader, more commercial, if you will, more plot driven, and had a variety of people I don't know and never will know. Much more imaginative. So I hearkened back to my love of sci-fi and my reading of all the great masters back in the day, the Isaac Asimovs and Ray Bradburys and Philip K. Dick and you name it. I loved them all and read a lot in that genre. So I decided I wanted to do a sci-fi book, but I wouldn't have even gone in that direction had it not been for the subject matter. And we can get into that, but the subject matter required some knowledge of actual the science of longevity in this case. But I wanted it to be like those old masters in the sense that it would have some social underpinnings to it, that it isn't just about technology. It just isn't, it's not just about exotic circumstances or, it's about what I call social sci-fi. Take a premise, push it to its extreme, and how do people interact? How do people grapple with it? So that's the what got me around to the genre of making it like a sci-fi novel, and generate some serious discussion out of that, not just have it be a frivolous fantasy. So that's where I went. And it's about, I mean, just to go on about
Oh yeah, go right ahead.
the subject matter. It's about a breakthrough in human longevity that happens very suddenly after a lot of effort. And it sort of gets out of control. And suddenly you have radical extensions of the human lifespan that spreads all around the world. Over a span of 10 or 20 years, this becomes obvious that people are not dying at the rate that they used to, and that there doesn't seem to be any upward limit on this. And as more and more people begin to exhibit this phenomenon, you can imagine some of it. Well, I tried to imagine and to dramatize some of the consequences. Because when I was researching the subject of longevity science and what is actually happening out there in the world of people trying to push the boundaries of our age limits and treat the phrases treat aging as a disease. I mean, that's the mentality of a lot of the researchers and a lot of the leaders in this area. That aging is not, we shouldn't accept it as a natural outcome of living. There's something wrong that can be corrected there. But the more I read about it, it was fascinating that two things struck me. And one was that everyone regards, or they tend to regard longevity treatment or longevity extension as something like a luxury good. It's like, it's going to be expensive. It's going to take a lot of, it's going to, billions of dollars of research and then very expensive treatments if they work. We read all the time about these billionaires freezing themselves, putting themselves in cryogenic tanks and hoping they wake up 50 years from now. There's that sort of mentality of this is a luxury good for the rich. But the other thing that struck me is all the writers in this area, that is the nonfiction writers, the reporters and the scientists who are writing about this subject, all seem to regard lengthened lifespans as naturally a good thing. It's just a presumption that more life, longer lives, is an undiluted good. I mean, it's just, why not? And the more I thought about that, no one discusses the economic and the social stresses and the familial consequences of what would really happen if we did live an extra 50 years, and this occurred with say in this very generation of the oldest population right now. What if large numbers of them suddenly began to live well into their 120s, 150s, 160s? Well, no one thinks about that. And there's the whole question of quality of life. You're gonna live longer, but under what health conditions and whatnot. So the book was an attempt to dramatize all that and have some fun with it and provide a little social satire and political satire in the bargain, and there's a good deal of that in it as well. But that's the premise and how I came up with it.
I love that, first of all, because when I first read the blurb for it, I thought to myself, this sounds very similar to kind of like, I teach social studies, so and I like how you put that too, like social science fiction. I'm gonna give you credit for that, but
Oh, thank you.
I'm
I
definitely
like
gonna
that.
use that, but I'm gonna give you credit for that. But I'm gonna use that a lot now because that to me really signifies, like, there's that Justin Timberlake movie back in the day. I don't think it did really hot, but it was a great movie. It was In Time, where the rich, like the richer you are, the more time you have. And if you run out of time, you die, right? But if you get more time, and he gets like somebody's all their time essentially. But it really was like a social class issue, right? Like his mom was, looked like his age and stuff because of whatever the time did to your body, whatever. But she died, like it's in the preview, guys. Sorry, it's a 14, 50-year-old movie, but she dies really quickly, right? And that like really affects him, and he's running out of time, literally. It was just such a great example, I think, of like our current healthcare structure in the different issues. Because if you don't have the money, right, it's really difficult.
Yeah.
So like I had an issue with my son for like his ambulance bill for NICU, going from one NICU to another. And they go, well, it wasn't covered under insurance or something because the ambulance company doesn't take it. And I'm like, wait. Were you thinking that we were gonna wait to call another ambulance for my baby? You know what I
Right.
mean? And I
Yeah.
go, does anybody in our area cover that insurance? Our insurance? They go, oh no. I go, oh, okay. And so I see that as, and I'm trying to explain to my wife, I'm like, it drives me nuts because I was like, that makes no sense to me, right? Like you have the thing, like why is that? It makes no sense to me. But like I remember things like in time where I grew up with, right, where I'm looking at these social science fiction issues that are we're literally talking about them in my classes right now for political science, and then there's oh God, Altered Carbon.
Yeah. Yes, one of my favorites.
I'm like totally blanking like on the author. I feel really bad right now. But that's another one, right? Where the wealthy elite, kind of like Matt Damian's also Elysium, right? Where
Yes.
the wealthy, and I think that that was, I think that's what really drew me to, the book in particular for the blurb. It is on my list for 2025, actually, just so you know. So I have a video coming out for that really shortly this weekend. It was a two-parter. I added too many books on there, but I'm doing
Okay.
pretty well so far. But
Good.
it really, but really stuck with me because I liked those kind of social science fiction issues, like you mentioned. There's different things from Blade Runner and stuff. I think are
Yeah.
very similar. Star Wars has a lot of that classism stuff too. So I think that you were really onto something there. And I don't know. I always think the longevity studies or anything involving that with the science, or like anytime the TV show Castle, like they have one of those episodes where somebody was, cryogenically,
Right.
whatever. Like, I don't know. I always love the mystery shows when any of them do that. Psych had one back in the day. Like, I don't know. It's always been really interesting to me. So you took two things that I find very interesting, from a science fiction aspect or just science, and these social issues. That bring a lot of questions with it, like you said. And I don't know, I think that was really well done. And it just makes to me a very interesting premise for a science fiction book. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I hope you like it, and I hope others do, because it's become such a hot topic, and I think it's very superficially thought through. If people don't really, aren't really considering what this might actually mean, it tends to be conflated with looking younger when you are younger. I mean, when it tends to be conflated with looks.
Oh,
And let's make sure that, middle-aged men and women look like they're 30 instead of 60. But that's a whole different offshoot of it than what this is about, which is, we actually have lifespans that increase significantly. And I don't think people are thinking that one through very much at all. Certainly not on a societal level.
Yeah, we'll look at even like Bicentennial Man with Robin Williams, right? Where he's like the robot or whatever, but then over
Yeah.
time he creates these, in between like organics, right? And then that line, I always love that movie because the line gets blurred, right? It's like, what is humanity, right? And then, he ends up becoming fully human later on. But the same thing, right? He's the offshoot of that is, it goes both ways, but also that. There was, I don't know, there was just some great stuff there, but I've always loved that movie because it really made me ask those questions, right? Like, this would be great to have people living to 130, but also what are the, even economic ramifications currently, right? And
Yes,
the economist in
exactly.
my head's like, ooh, like I hate to break it to you
Exactly.
guys, but the industry of whatever you want to call it, like of people dying,
Yeah.
ends, it's a lot of
Yeah.
money, right?
Yeah.
So not that
Yeah.
I agree with it, but
Yeah.
I tell my family, I'm like, just put me in a library somewhere, dust me around.
You're right. There are so many, and this is some of this that is explored in the book. There are so many aspects of our economic system that are based on certain lifespans. They're based on the presumption that it takes Social Security for the big one. Your whole payout from Social Security is based on how long the government believes you're going to live. And we know that is you're gonna, last until your 70s and maybe your 80s, and that's it.
Yeah, imagine if that doubles, right? To
That's
130,
it.
130, right?
So you start violating that premise, and all hell breaks loose, and
Well,
that's
that's where we get Repo Man from, right? Like with Jude Law, and his partner or whatever. Like, yeah, that was another good one too, where I was like, dang, I could see that like actually happening.
I
Yeah,
forgot
or I
about
think it was
that
like
one.
from the graphic novel too, or whatever, right? Yeah, that's a good
That's
one.
a
Like, you
good
should check that out if you haven't seen it. It's or read
one.
the graphic novel. It was really good, but it was like
Yeah.
really made me think. I was like, oh wow, like it from a science fiction aspect. But like again, if you really like social science fiction, I think it brought up just some great premises. I actually was just discussing with an author. You guys are in the same realm, I would say, for social science fiction. It's probably too early for me to say too much, but like he's got an idea between Repo Men and You, but still talking about like healthcare crisis and things like that, but with science fiction. But it ended up being like really interesting. But he's like, yeah, I always love that, like some of these concepts from that movie and the graphic novel. I'm like, run with it. So I think that's what he's doing currently, but it'll be interesting to see what different people come out with. But that's again why I like, why I wanted to interview you about, this book and your idea, because to me it's really interesting because, most science fiction, I tell kids all the time, like it's not all starships, outer space, whatever,
Exactly.
you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
and a lot of them have interesting ideas that, like your book, some like one of my kids or me reading it, right, could lead to some other totally different idea that, it's just interesting, I think, when you look at it from a cultural diffusion aspect. And I don't know, I think it's interesting again to analyze society, like you said, right, for these problems, that we have currently, and how would they be, if this, science fiction, but it could happen. You never know, right? Like something could change and, we have mutated cells or something, and all of a sudden our whole infrastructure could be ruined because of it. So I think that's really interesting. But I do want to talk about what can your audience expect from your cast of characters in this novel? Because it sounds like a great premise, but I'm curious at what can we expect from the cast of characters in this book?
Well, you can expect a lot of multi-generational interaction. One of the things I wanted to portray was grandparents and grandchildren dealing with the same issue, for instance. And it's interesting, most of the characters in the book are female, for whatever reason. It was just the way my imagination took me. But there's a politician, there's a biowarfare specialist, who gets into the leading edge of trying to contain this new outbreak, if you will, of longevity. There's a philosopher of death and dying who becomes a part of a political backlash against all these people living such extraordinary long lives. There's one of my favorite characters is a guy named Tobin, he's a little Asperger's, a little OCD, he's definitely on the spectrum, but he's a social media programmer. And he's young, he's in his 30s, he's employed by a biotech company for the specific purpose of influencing these ultra elders, as they've become to be called in the world of the novel. He's trying to influence ultra elders to take a what amounts to a very slow-acting drug that will a suicide drug that will end their lives, because the company is gonna make a boatload of money from selling such a thing to people who just don't want to live that long. So he's an interesting character because he is very young and he's trying to deal with the fact of these vast numbers of people that he is being asked to understand and communicate with in a way that's going to influence them towards death. He ends up having a very interesting relationship with his he does have an interesting relationship with his grandparents, whom he visits at various points through the course of the novel. But he was one of my favorites. So it's a diverse cast of characters, both in occupation and in age, in race, and they're all grappling with the same issue, but they're sometimes contending with each other and sometimes cooperating, and sometimes there's a transition between the two where they start out being on opposite sides of the fence and end up having to figure out how to work together. So I wanted that to be the thrust of the character interactions is no static characters, no people who don't change over the course of what they learn about themselves and the world in this strange new world of extreme lifespans.
That sounds really interesting. I love when you have a situation like this, right? I love where people have a diverse cast of characters because I think you'd have a lot of different people in society, like you said, right? Who have a lot of feelings about it one way or the other, right? And they probably would agree or disagree for different reasons at different times. That's just like in general, right, with these major topics. And it's interesting you mentioned that though, because like we just talked about that today in my poli sci course, where like my friend and I, like he's a little bit older than me, like we're much older than the kids. We're talking like a lot of them just turned 17, about to turn 18. And I don't like to think that I'm 37 and I think that much differently, but I do, right? And you forget that sometimes, right?
Oh,
And we
totally.
discussed that today. It came up where we were like, oh, like you guys don't use this vernacular. Like you guys
Right,
haven't seen Star
right.
Wars, you know? Yeah, it just got really interesting with some of the things, that we discussed in general that were different. And, they mentioned, like different demographics, right? Where like we're trying to appeal to people voting wise. But I think it's the same thing here, right? So I think it's really smart on your part because, I have students that I know for a fact, like when I tell them about your book, like, I'm like, hey, I just talked to this author, and they're gonna be like, oh, this is like totally my thing. I work at a tech academy. We got a lot of kids who are really interested in moving on from here for their associates to go into maybe a more full program for biotech or something like that. So this is like they love science fiction and just interesting concepts like this. So I know that's the first thing you're gonna ask me though, like, are there characters that aren't your age only?
Well, they're not their age, but there are some young ones in there.
Well, they just don't like them to be my age. I'm like, wow, okay. I think they think I'm like 50,
Of
but
course. Of course they do.
yeah, it's funny. I asked them, I was like, what do you mean? And like, yeah, but it was interesting. But I like that too for, also like you were saying, in terms not just age, but like demographic or even gender or, but particularly when you're talking about like different positions, right? Because I think somebody, a politician or somebody by a warfare is right, going to be totally different than, like you were saying, somebody that works for one of these companies. So I think it's really interesting in a situation that you've created and done to your characters like this, right? But that you really get like a wide, range of people, so that we can really understand, the wide range of emotions or reactions, to this event. So I think that's really, really cool. But what kind of tropes did you kind of lean into for this novel? I'm curious, kind of got a little bit of thriller tropes, it kind of sounds like. So I was kind of curious if that was in fact true, or like what type of tropes can we expect? I'm just kind of curious.
There's definitely a thriller thing going on. There's a lot of chasing around trying to,
Awesome.
capture this person or interrogate that person, or there's a lot of global espionage is the wrong word, but a lot of global intrigue.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
A lot of different settings, both in the U.S. and internationally, most of which I've had the privilege to visit, so I was, evoking my own memories of places. But in terms of tropes, it's in part a disaster novel, because it's about a global disaster that very quickly arises, and the sort of, theme where a bunch of specialists come together to grapple with an overwhelming problem. It's a climate crisis, population crisis novel for sure. It's a political satire in the sense that there's a it makes fun of some of our current tendencies to the skepticism about science and fear of the other. And the divisiveness of our current political scene sort of get pushed to some logical extremes. But it's hard. I think it's sort of the Frankenstein trope. It's like a very determined, brilliant scientist creates something that ends up having just disastrous collateral. And what he's created is good, but it ends up having disastrous collateral consequences that he hadn't really thought through. So that's those are sort of the, but some of the funnest parts for me was the it, there's some strong satirical elements to it, both of corporate life, of political life, of intergenerational relations, some of which you experience every day in your classroom,
Yeah.
and how we forget the old, the old forget what it's like to be young, and the young can't imagine what it's like to be old, so it's like this natural, this natural breakdown of empathy that we always have to strive to overcome.
Yeah, it was interesting because my friend and I, we talked like, we're like, oh, we really think psychologically we're able to, understand X, Y, and Z. And but it's difficult for us lately because, especially after the pandemic, like there's been a lot of things like I could never imagine. I have had kids that like haven't turned things in for a unit for like 2.5 weeks. Like, guys, I can't imagine not having something turned in for my teacher of any, you know what I mean? Like, that's unheard of, right? But for them, it's like it totally makes sense, particularly after the pandemic. And it's like the whole rule book that we used to work with, even like 4 months before that was like completely thrown out by their generation. So it's just been absolutely like interesting, which is why, Keith, I write still, because if I don't write, I'm just like, I just go crazy, because I'm just like, what am I doing? So, it definitely helps me to, just to have some fun. And because otherwise I'm like, what are we doing here? That kind of thing. That sounds really awesome. I love me some satirical, political science in a near future. So those kind of things are right up my alley. I love the thriller aspect. I love where somebody, I love things that you can, take different components of and just make something really unique. And well, I gotta say, when they sent me your book, sent me the blurb, I looked at the cover and I was like, I gotta like check this out right now. It's like with my son, and I was like, you okay for a minute? So I checked out the blurb right away that they sent me. I was like, yeah, it's definitely my thing. So I was so glad they sent it to me. And asked like, hey, do you want to interview Keith? I'm like, I have to now because this sounds like my thing. I love thriller. I love mystery. But I particularly love those elements. I love, obviously geopolitical things, whether it's military, whatever, fiction or whatever. So I love though where you have some of these elements all here with science fiction, in a very unique story. So I think that's just really, really well done. So I really look forward to all those things you mentioned with those tropes. So, and I love the cover.
I do think the cover is really good. This
I
is
love the cover. I
one
think
of
it
the
fit the blurb perfectly. Like, personally, maybe it's the design teacher in me, but I thought it was really well done. So I'm so glad that they sent me the cover, because that was like the first thing I saw, and I was like, ah, all right. I was like, now I have to check out the blurb right away. But I want to point out to our audience again, when we talk about 60 to 65% of people say that they judge your book by its cover, they really do. Okay, they might not be ex-design teachers like me, but that's the first thing they see. So,
Oh,
and then
for
your
sure.
blurb, I have to say, Keith, though, your blurb really pulled me in like right off the bat after that. So I always tell people, I don't look at reviews. I look at your cover. I look at your blurb. I'll look at your other books, which I did. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I want to see, because I could tell that you had some big character development, based off of your other book. So I thought that was really, I could tell that was going to pop up here. So I was like, oh, that's interesting looking at background. So I looked at those things before looking at reviews. So I encourage a lot of people to do that, because I think you get your reading interests out better that way. And I know exactly what I'm going to like a book now, because I've been able to develop my taste a little bit more as a reader. So Which I highly encourage our audience to do. And
Yeah.
please don't leave one star reviews, because that means you don't know your taste, in my opinion. But what were some of your main goals for this novel?
Well, as we were talking about earlier, I wanted to examine these unspoken assumptions about our current fixation with longevity, and the things we're not thinking through about that, and about the social stresses that would result from the act, if this act, if we actually did start to lead dramatically longer lives, even if we're healthy. Leaving aside what would be a whole different story if you grow older in an unhealthy state. But I want to dramatize the stresses that would impose on families. And I think that's really an interesting part, on individuals, obviously, and on society at large, when you talk about socioeconomic ramifications of all of this. But I also wanted to get at the whole topic of ageism and the fact that we do stratify ourselves. We're so unconscious about this. It's like fish in water. We don't even recognize it as
Yep.
it's going on. We tend to segregate ourselves into these age groups, both mentally and physically, that in a way that is so wasteful of one another's capacities. And you're in a profession as a teacher where the whole point of it is to bridge those gaps so God bless all the teachers, because that is exactly what they're trying to do, is to break down those barriers and deliver knowledge from one generation to another and absorb, wisdom from the young and give it back. That's a unique role in our world, and most of us don't live that way. Most of us just go, in our little social ruts where we associate with people of our own age, and it doesn't matter what age that is. We did it when you were teenagers, and we're doing it when we're in our 60s and 70s. The people just congregate into their little groups, tend not to socialize across them. And as people get older, I think there is a tremendous amount of dehumanization of the aged in our culture, and in a way that is not true of some other cultures that have a more honorific attitude towards old age. It's just so we're so fixated on youth and beauty and, the latest thing, that we have, ostracized and condescended to and basically segregated the old in a way that's historically weird, because that was not the way of our even our ancestors, let alone other cultures, and is dysfunctional and harmful to the people who have to undergo it. So and part of it's isolation, mutual isolation. But anyway, long-winded way of saying one of my main goals was to address in a non-preachy way the whole subject of ageism and how almost comically foolish it is, and we don't even recognize it. Some of the satire is around that whole subject, is how, blind we are to how ageist we are. But anyway, that was a big goal in writing this, was to be entertainingly forceful about that subject.
Well, I think that makes total sense, though. I do karate, and my instructor terrifies me. She turned 77.
Wow.
I've worked with people that like I've trained with people, I've trained alongside people, I've been kicked or punched or rolled with people, like wrestled with them, whatever, jujitsu, judo, who like have gone on to the UFC, male and female. And I have to say, she's the only one that scares me.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know, but it's nuts. Like you're talking to somebody who's done karate every day for 48 years.
Wow.
And yeah, she, I mean, she moves like definitely way better than me. But it's crazy, you know, because a lot of the people that, and we do a lot of, it's not like, I would say like it's a pretty hard style karate, but the way we practice, it's not super crazy and stuff, which I like because I've done a lot of combat sports over the years and stuff, and contact sports. So my body definitely needed the rejuvenation. So there's a lot of internal stuff, and definitely helped me repair my body a lot. But I cannot believe some of the people with their ages, you know, that come every day and how they're able to move, you know. And I agree with like, you know, segregating, because I have these friends, right? And they're like, oh yeah, my knee's at 30. And I'm like, okay, well, you should go and, you know, go to physical therapist, go to a chiro, flex, you know, get some flexibility back, stuff like that. You know, and some people just have stuff, but anytime I've been injured, I had a really bad back injury a couple years ago. And it's taken like 5 years for me to really get over it. But I was like, I don't want to be one of those guys who can't pick up my nephew at the time, you know, and I didn't have my son yet, and I knew I wanted to have a kid. I was like, I want to be able to hold my kid, you know. And it's taken me a long time. And you know, but I see people like my instructor, my original Taekwondo instructor. He's got to be like, oh my God, reaching 80 this year at least, if not like 82. And he'll wipe the floor with me, you know. Like, and you know, these two, I'm just like, they never stop moving, you know. No matter if they're injured or whatever, like they just keep going, you know. And they have not let their age at any point, right? Like, they haven't let it divide them into who they were. So I've taken that a lot into account, right? And like I said, sometimes I met people where it's like there's just things that, you know, that can't be helped, but I've always just learned to work around them based off of the older people that were around me in the martial arts community, which I'm very blessed for. You know, and it's one of those things. And I've had my dad sometimes told me like, you need to stop doing that. I'm like, nope, because once I stop doing it, I won't be able to do it ever again.
Yeah.
And that's just the thing. I see all these older guys at the gym. Like, there's a group of like, I think they're like six of them, gotta be between like 58 and 60. And they put me to shame. I'm like, I'm over there like trying now. I'm like, man, I don't want to look like you guys. People are like, what happens to your hair? I'm like, I don't care about up here. I'm like, I'll grow out a thicker beard, and I just want to look like, you know, like a really Jack Santa or something. Like, I don't care, you know, but like, I want to be able to still move and, you know, be able to do certain things. But I'm like 37. I can go on the court with the kids tomorrow for volleyball, wipe the floor with them, or, you know, or basketball. They always laugh because I'm still pretty quick. But you know, I've not allowed what you said though, you know, to, oh, I'm 30 now, I'm gonna whatever. I'm like, I take really good care of myself. And you know, and I think that's part of that longevity, you know, you're speaking of too, you know,
Yeah.
is like it's, which I think is interesting, right? Is I think it's also a societal thing. Like, so I'm so glad you just said that. Like, I think a lot of times we're like, oh, I'm 30 now, I can't do this, or I can't do that, or I'm 40 now, I can't do this. I'm like, I'm 3 years from being 40, and I'm actually in better shape than I was like 6, 7 years ago. So I'm actually about to go back to jujitsu in the next couple of years, which is gonna suck as a 40-year-old. I already know it. But you know, if I keep moving, you know, I feel like it'll be fine, you know, and keep trying to take care of myself. But I think when you stop using it, you lose it. And I've just seen
Yeah.
that with a lot of people. But I love
Yeah,
what you said there
definitely.
though about dividing ourselves. So I love that you took that into account.
But it's interesting when you bring out martial arts, because of course that again was is the influence of Eastern cultures, where
Exactly. Yep. That's a great point.
all those originated,
Yep.
and the belief that it's the oldest among us who know the most and are
Yep.
going to be the best at this, and they're the teachers, and
That's so true. Yeah.
It's, you know, and that whole idea, it's not surprising to me. You've got a 70 plus year old, you know, woman who's beating your butt in jujitsu or whatever it is, you
Yeah,
know.
she's booked me quite a few times, but
There's
talk
actually
about that.
a scene in the book. You really have to go and read
Yeah,
it.
yeah.
There's a scene in the book where one of the protagonists, in fact, the biowarfare gal lady, is, and she works with the CIA at one point in her life, and she goes to, I won't tell you the whole scene, but she goes to Tokyo to deal with a problem, and at the point in the book this happens, there has been a general reaction against the number of old people, especially in a world like Japan, where they're already extremely aged population on average, and she has to physically deal with someone who accosts her in the street. And I wanted to get across that very idea of the, in this case, 125-year-old woman,
Oh, that's terrifying.
dealing with this dude who bothers her on the street, you know. So anyway, it's a fun scene.
That's awesome. Yeah, that as soon as you say that, I'm like, oh God, because I had a friend for judo, and he like one of the oldest judoka, like female judoka in the United States. Like he trained for a long time, and I was like, I'm just curious. I was like, because I'm thinking like the older you are, the better your technique is, and the less you have to do anyway if you're doing it right, right? And she had one of those, she was like one of the first black belts, like female black belts in the United
Wow.
States. I know, right? And it was pretty crazy. So I'm like, how bad did she throw you? You know? And he goes, dude, he goes, I have a video. He shows me a video. And she only throws him like this much, it looks, you know, it looks like, right? Like off the shoulder. And he's much taller than she is. She was probably like 5'4" or something like that. And he goes, I think I'm still waking up and like feeling it. So I can only imagine. But you're right. Like we really do value in the community, like, or communities, we really do value, you know, like Chuck Norris. Like, look at Chuck Norris, right? He's got multiple black belts in multiple disciplines. I mean, and he's up there, right? He's like gotta be 79 this year. Like he's reaching 80,
Is
you
that
know?
right? Wow.
He's up there. But yeah, like we like I have people that, you know, have met him and trained with him and stuff. And I mean, you're just like trying to, you know, just soak up that sponge as much as you can. But you bring up a good point that, you know, it is interesting, you know, here in the United States in particular, right? Where the whole respect your elders thing is just like thrown out the window now. And we don't listen to people, you know, who've had, you know, have had experience. Some of us tend to listen to people that know more than them. Like, that's what I do. People are like, how do you get better at this so quick? I'm like, I maybe it's because I've had older instructors, you know, who have
Yeah.
wiped the floor with me. You know, I've just like
Yeah.
firsthand, I'm like, I don't know. Maybe it's because they proved to me, right, that they know more
Yeah.
than me. I don't know. But thank goodness that they have, you know, because you know, I that's with writing too. I have had some, you know, people are a few years older than me, and they're like, hey, you know, I really think you should, you know, change this. Or even if they don't, even if they're younger. But in martial arts, we also have people that are younger, right? Like when I first started, I had people that were like 10 that were whooping my butt, and that's not because I was a wimp. That was because they were just that good, you know. And it really makes you
Works
take
both
notice.
ways.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It works both ways. So that's
Yeah.
where today, right, I've had some younger authors, but you know, they have 7 or 8 books out. They're doing really well, you know. And I just think you make a really good point with the novel though, right? In terms of, you know, in terms of ageism. Because like, yeah, like I said, it could go either way. So I think that's a really smart issue, you know, to really tackle. Because I think if we start talking about it more, which I talk about a lot with my students, you know, like what do people have to offer? Like, are you really looking at what people have to offer, or are you just looking at them? You know, and I think when we really look at that from a social studies standpoint, I think we can try and make some headway into some of these issues that you're talking about in terms of social science fiction here, which I think is really interesting. But I can't wait to watch her whoop that guy's butt. I'm really excited
Enjoy
about that now. So
that chapter. That's a good chapter.
that's gonna be awesome. What do you think one of your biggest setbacks was in writing this novel? What was your biggest triumph?
Well, setback would have to be I had to change the whole structure of it about halfway through because I'd started out with the idea that this would be a feature history. It would be a historian
Oh, cool.
that had gone back and collected diaries basically from people who lived through this strange period of time in the latter half of the 21st century where everything changed. And so it was originally a series of diary entries written by the different characters. But the farther I got into it, the more I realized that the whole idea of these people who are engaged in this, trying to deal with this crisis would be sitting around writing extremely detailed diary entries. It just strained credulity. So I ended up having to jettison that and go back to a sort of third party, close third person perspective. And yes, take different characters' perspectives moving through the thing. But I basically had to rewrite. I was probably 90% finished with the book at that point. Basically had to rewrite the whole thing, and shifting from first person, as you know, as a writer or shifting from first person to third person is not just like thousands of pronoun changes. It's tone. There's a whole different way you convey what's going on. You're the omniscient, close third person narrator, as opposed to, a character speaking. And so that was a lot of, had to do several drafts to get that right. And it's funny when I, even as I read it today, I see little phrases that I realize are a holdover from that first concept. And I didn't catch them all, but that was the hardest, that was the biggest struggle, if you will. The biggest, I don't know if triumph's the right word, but the most fun was, as I think I alluded to earlier, finding the right voice for my young male character, who had to be a little bit naive and a little bit sort of, skeptical about what he was doing, but not that skeptical that it would prevent him from doing it. And he's working his way through in a corporate world, which I know a bit about from my legal background, and I wanted to both make fun of that world and but portray him in it. And I was really pleased with finding the right voice for him, just the way he would speak and the way his scenes were presented are different from the rest. And he's supposed to be OCD slash Asperger. So I wanted him to have a very unique world view of the people around him and the situations and how he approached problems and all that sort of thing. So I was very pleased with the way that came out, and it was, as a writer, fun. It was gratifying, and when I go back and read it now, it feels it's one of the nicer elements of the book all the way through. So I hope you enjoy, and all the readers enjoy that part.
Well, I think that is a total triumph. I have a character where my main character, I'm like, he's been such a hard, like, I did the same thing. I'm used to third person from like fantasy, and urban fantasy is generally first person, right? And oh my
Yeah.
God, at first I was like, just write. And then I wasn't ready. So I'm like draft five right now, doing the same thing, like really trying to make sure that, I've done the first person justice. So that's like pretty much what I'm fixing. I have very few things. I have some specific things and like 3.5 scenes to add, but other than that, I'm just fixing that still, to make sure I've really describe things from a first person standpoint versus third. It's been difficult. So I feel you on that struggle. That's I'm definitely gonna say that when somebody asks me that in the future. So I definitely feel you there. But I definitely understand the triumph too, like with but I think that when you say it's fun, like that's great, because I think to me, like that says that you really were able to connect with that character. I'm still trying to tweak just a little bit. I'm like so close with my main character to like finally, like I got him, but I really want to nail him down. He's kind of between like a Jack Reacher and Justin Hartley's character from the TV show The Tracker, but he's like in between. Like it's hard, right? So I'm like going back and forth. I'm like finally nailing it in between. So I can't wait, because I'm gonna say that answer just like you did, but for that character. So I'm gonna say both of those. So it's funny that we have very similar experiences there with our characters, I think. And setting up the story and things like that. So I totally understand that. But I think that's awesome, because to me it gives me hope that when I'm done with, nailing his character down, it could be fun again. Because I'm so close to being fun again. I'm just in that spot where it's like it's been hard lately, but
And believe me, there are innumerable hours. I'm doing working on some new stuff now where I'm in that bad spot where you don't know how you're going to get out of it. You've built yourself into, you've painted yourself into a corner, and you're trying to figure out, how do I structurally and stylistically move forward? And you can't seem to get off the, anyway, it's a
I like
whole.
that you've said that though. You kind of made me feel better there, Keith, because part of me is like, I'm working on the structure and the structure's there, but I think it's stylistically. So I just want to mention that to our audiences. You know, sometimes I'm actually glad that we had this interview today, because you actually made me feel better. Because that's I was trying to figure out a way, to express my problem to a couple of my friends, right? But I think it's not structure, because they've helped me with the structure. I think it's stylistically. And
Yeah.
being a new author, so I've written a lot of things, but not published, right? So I
Yeah.
think it's stylistically I'm struggling. So I appreciate that. I think that that is a really great way to put it. But I totally agree. It gets frustrating after a while. I told my friend, I go, I'm canceling all my calls after next week. I was like, it's just gonna have to be me and this computer for
Yeah.
the next like 3 weeks just to
Yeah.
get by
And
it. So.
sometimes you gotta draw those lines sometimes to get
Yep.
it done.
My wife goes, so I can't call you until after 4. I go, not unless it's an emergency. I'm like, just the next 3 weeks. Like, so that's like what we've set aside. But yeah, I totally feel you there. That's awesome. Well, do you have any other news updates or current projects, anything like that you can share with us before we head out for the day?
Well, if anybody's in on the coastal Florida area in March, early March, I'm going to be appearing at on Sanibel at what is called Big Arts, which is their main cultural center. Beautiful, beautiful campus on Sanibel near Fort Myers, if you know the area. And I'm going to be appearing with a guy named Chip Walter, who is a nonfiction writer. Who and a former CNN guy and everything else, who has written a book on longevity science. So we're going to do a sort of longevity fact and fiction thing
That's cool.
on March 12th down here in Sanibel. And it'll if anybody's around for that, please come by. You can look it up on the Big Arts website. And then writing wise, I'm working on a sequel to the book we're discussing, because I figure there are so many elements of it that I had to just allude to and didn't really. I want to go back and flesh those out. And there's a concept of time travel that comes up very, or it's actually memory travel that comes up very late in the book that I want to develop more. And make do my best to make. I think time travel is such an overdone, talk about a trope, overdone thing. But I'm trying to my ambition here is to make it all believable again and make it fresh. And I'm gonna make an effort with that in the sequel that I hope to be working on soon. But anyway, that's the main upcoming stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, that was like my next question to ask, because I just think that personally, I think that I see a lot of depth already for reading. This is what I do now, is I just have such a better time reading people's books after I interview them, because it gives me the director's cut. I think I enjoy it more because I understand more where you guys are coming from, from not just a reader standpoint, but from a writer's. I'm a reader and a writer. So it's like two of me enjoys it a lot more. I don't know. I've just
I
noticed
totally
that,
get it.
yeah, it's just helped me out a lot in terms of, being like, oh, and I'm a little more patient now, right? Like,
Yeah.
oh, I know that this is what, Keith's trying to do, and I just gotta kind of let the ball roll a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think you just have so much here, and it just sounds so interesting, and my mind's just whirling with all your possibilities for stories on different continents. And you could even be running them all at the same time, right? And you could be, I just think you have so many interesting concepts. So that makes you really excited to know you're working on that right off the bat. And I know a lot of the people listening will think the same. So that's really awesome.
I hope so. Thanks so much.
Well, I just want to remind our audience, in case you guys are new, if you are just popping in, at the end or something like that, because that Keith's going to be talking about cool things like a sequel, make sure you guys have checked out the middle of our interview too, so you can really check out what Keith has said about his novel Lifers, what it's about, its characters, things like that. I had a great chat. I learned a lot today, Keith, so thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I just want to remind people, in the description, you can find all of Keith's books and social links, anything he wants you guys to click on. It's going to be right down in the description, anywhere where you're watching this podcast or listening to it on audio. If you guys could just remember, like Keith mentioned, audio narrators, voice actors, those kind of people, mentioned a couple of, other people that were helping him as well. anytime that you guys are reviewing any of those products. I just got done with a book yesterday, a Kindle book, and the Audible at the same time, because I do half and half usually or something like that. I make sure that I copy and paste my review for Kindle and put it into Audible. And of course, it goes right to Goodreads from Kindle. So if you guys could just remember to do that. Trying to remember, remind everybody that those audios are different, right? So you got to copy and paste, but it just takes 5 seconds, and then
Yeah,
I'm able to
it
do
makes a
that.
big
So,
difference.
yeah, and it helps everybody, not just Keith, but all of his team, which ultimately is going to help everybody in the long run to get more books from Keith. And I'm looking forward to that. Keith, thank you so much for coming on today. This was absolutely awesome, and it's
Thank
exactly what I
you.
needed before my writing session today. So I really
I'm so
appreciate
glad.
that. But I look forward to the book. I will be sending, all the other information you need. I did totally forget to remind you, or tell you beforehand. Like I said, just to remind you, I do have Lifers on my 2025 list. So I'm just finishing up. I got a little sick this week, like I said. So I'm finishing up part two, because I had to divide it because it was like 52 books. So might be
Wow.
60 by, yeah. So I've already
Sure.
knocked down like five. I think it would be six by tonight or tomorrow. But it is on my part two list. I might have to divide that up into three parts. I'm trying to keep it pretty close. But I have that second part that I am filming. So as soon as I get that done this week or this weekend, I will send it to you guys. So that way you can kind of, share that before this comes out. And then, we'll kind of generate some interest for our interview for, for February when it releases. But if there's anything else you need in the meantime, or you ever just want to chat or something like that, feel free to, give me a ring, and they have my email. But other than that, I'd love to chat with you, when, your sequel comes out, and we'll get the word out there as much as we can about book
Great,
one.
great. Thank you so much, Danny. I really appreciate it. And I can get your email from Corinne, I guess. So
Yep. I didn't even
I'll
think
do that.
to tell her about that. But
So
yeah, she has it.
she's very, she's very careful about that. So.
There's been some things the last 2 weeks. Like some people in the community, I know there's been some issues. So I totally understand.
Yeah,
Like
I
I
do too.
was, yeah, I always just tell authors, like, feel free. And I think a lot of people are, fine. They've known me. I've been, out and about for a while, but I totally get it, man, because there's just some sharks out there, and I've had some friends recently just have some issues. So, but yeah, feel free. Like I'll tell her, do you mind just giving Keith my email? I got some other info and things. We got like a Facebook group. So if you ever want to come on and,
Oh, cool.
talk about anything. The only thing I did want to ask before we head out, I was just curious, is your talk going to be recorded at all? Because I would absolutely love to see it if it is by anybody. So.
I think it's going to be streaming.
Oh, okay,
I
cool.
think you can
Okay, cool.
stream it. Yeah, I'll send you the link.
Oh,
I
that would be awesome. Because I'll actually, I was gonna say, if they have the live stream, if they ended up doing a recording or something, I would love to, try and put that in the description or something. Because I think that sounds absolutely fascinating. I want to check it out. I know other people in the audience would be really interested based off my conversations with them privately. So.
Cool. Yeah, I'll get you that info because it may be recorded, but it's certainly streaming,
Yeah. I mean, if I
that
could catch
usually
it live,
means
I would totally catch it live personally. So, but yeah, if they do a recording, just so you know, I know a lot of people that would be interested. So, and I have a blog too on my website, and I have a newsletter coming up, so I can always put that in for February for you guys too, if you just send me a link or the information for it. So if you just send it to Corinne, she can send it to me or however you want to do it, and I can get it out there for you. So
Super.
cool.
Okay.
Well,
Thanks.
Keith, thank you so
Thanks so much,
much.
man.
Yeah, I
Appreciate it.
appreciate it. It was just awesome. Thank you so much, and good luck with book two, okay?
Thank you.
See you later, Keith. Have a good rest of the day.
See you soon. You too. Take
Thanks,
care.
bud. You too. Bye.